Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. The federal government's on the verge of another shutdown, and our next guest is in the midst of dealing with this directly. Massachusetts Congressman Seth Moulton is in our studios, and we will take your calls about this issue and others. As for the shutdown, President Trump has said that unless Congress agrees to devote $5 billion to a border wall, he'd be proud to shut down the government. White House advisor Stephen Miller said this on Face the Nation yesterday.
We're going to do whatever is necessary to build the border wall to stop this ongoing crisis of illegal immigration.
And that means
this
to
is
shut
a,
down?
This is a very, if it comes to it, absolutely. This is a very fundamental issue.
Congressman Moulton represents the 6th congressional district in Massachusetts. That includes Burlington, North Andover, and Salem. Congressman Moulton, welcome back to Radio Boston.
It's good to be here.
Thanks, so, Deborah. Listeners, we want to remind you that we are opening up this conversation to you as well. Can we avoid a government shutdown? Can a compromise be reached over border security? What do you think? Call us at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also tweet us at Radio Boston. So, Congressman Moulton, we'll talk about the shutdown in a moment. But let's start with the somewhat contentious battle that just played out in
Sure.
the Democratic Party about House leadership. You have been saying that the party needs new leadership. It does look like Nancy Pelosi will be the next speaker. She agreed to take the position now, step down in 4 years. Was that a win?
You know, everyone tries to make this a personal battle with winners and losers, but this is about the future of our party. It's about an election that was all about change, an extraordinary number of new voices that came to Congress. And there are a lot of us, like myself, who want to make sure that those voices actually get heard, that these leaders actually get a chance to lead. And the deal that we came to an agreement on, which is term limits for the top three leadership position, that's huge for the future of our party and the future of our country. So, and Nancy Pelosi showed leadership by example by agreeing that this would be her last term on the last 2 years, unless she gets two-thirds of the caucus vote for a two-year extension. This will enable a new generation to rise. And so I think that's a huge win for the party and ultimately for the country.
Yeah, but you got some heat about this.
Oh, sure. You get a lot of heat in politics these days. Yeah.
Do you think that there was a different way to do this? I mean, you know, in hindsight, which of course, as they say, is always 2020, was there a better way to do this or a different way to do this that maybe would have made it not quite so hot?
Well, you know, there's always things. I mean, we always look back and say, you know, I wish I'd done this a little differently or that a little differently. But term limits is something that was not on the table that, you know, she had said earlier she wouldn't agree to. And it's a really revolutionary change for our caucus. And changes like that, working against the establishment, are hard. They're contentious. But ultimately, we were able to have a conversation that's important in a democracy, that's important in the Democratic Party. And it doesn't take anything away from the extraordinary past accomplishments of leaders like the top three, Pelosi, Clyburn, and Hoyer, and all that they've done for the party and for the country, to be able to talk about, who's going to take us forward.
Some have said it was the optics of speaking out against a woman. You think that's true? You think that's why it was quite so heated?
Well, I mean, certainly there are some people who tried to reduce it to that. Of course, there are a lot of women who were with us. Kathleen Rice wrote a really powerful op-ed in the Washington Post about how she had been sort of erased from the narrative by people who claimed that this was only men calling for change. And she's been a leader in this movement from the very beginning. So it was really unfair to her to you should read her piece. It was very powerful from her perspective. So, there are a lot of people who are going to play those perspectives. Mm-hmm. I think it's also important to acknowledge that Nancy Pelosi is a leader who completely shattered a glass ceiling in politics. She was the first woman to become Speaker of the House. And that's something that we should all celebrate. That was a remarkable achievement when she did that many years ago. But it doesn't, it doesn't take anything away from that to be able to say, okay, well, who are the next leaders who should take us forward? Mm.
And what do you think you would like to see under new leadership in the Democratic Party? Where is it going? Talk to us about where you want to see it go under new leadership.
You know, there are so many challenges that are next generation challenges that we need to take on. I just signed on to the Green New Deal, a proposal to really have fundamental changes to address climate change, which is, I don't know any issue that's more important in the long term for our kids or our grandkids. You know, my daughter, Emmy, I mean, I want her to grow up in a world where, you know, she can live where we live in Salem and it won't be underwater. I mean, that's literally what is at risk right now from our little condo, you know, where it is in downtown. We're talking about a Congress that needs to address the challenge of fake news. And there was just a new report that came out today about the Russian influence in the past election and all their work through social media. And yet Congress sort of infamously doesn't even understand Facebook. Well, there's a new generation of leaders who have come to Congress and get Facebook and use it and can talk about, have a real conversation with the American people about how we might want to responsibly regulate social media so that it's free and open, but also free from fake news influence, free from the Russians and the Chinese and others who want to fundamentally alter our democracy. So these are the kinds of challenges that I think that we need to have the courage to address. A couple others, tough issues like immigration. I spent some time on the border with some of the candidates I supported in this past election, candidates who were a huge part of winning back the new majority. My Serve America candidates of the candidates I endorsed, literally half the new majority that we won is those candidates. And we went down to the border to try to understand this issue from both sides, from the experience of refugees, from the experience of custom and border officials, from the experience of El Paso, Texas, but also the experience of Juarez, Mexico. We spent a lot of time on both sides of the border. This is a tough issue that a lot of people in Congress have been unwilling to touch, and yet I think there's a new generation of leaders who really want to tackle it head on.
And so you came away from that visit thinking, can I just interrupt you real quick?
Please.
I just want to remind listeners, if you have a question for Congressman Moulton, you can call us. We'll get you in line to ask him. It's 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also tweet us at Radio Boston. So, Congressman Moulton, you go down, you visit the border, you want to sort of tackle and dive into immigration. What do you come away thinking after those visits?
One of the things that was clear is that the system is fundamentally broken. And we didn't run into anybody who was saying that, you just need to enforce existing laws. We certainly didn't find anyone who said it's a good idea to build a wall. I mean, even the folks entrusted with guarding our nation from illegal immigration said a wall won't work. You know, it's meaningful when every member of Congress from a border region that the wall would go through, whether they're Democrat or Republican, as opposed to this idea from Trump that he said Mexico would pay for, and they're obviously not. But the point is that this system is broken on all sides. And unless we're actually willing to talk about fixing the system fundamentally, this problem isn't going to go away.
So do you think the government's going to shut down? I mean, have we reached a stalemate here with the president saying there's got to be this $5 billion for a border wall?
Well, it certainly doesn't make sense, but a lot of things out of this administration don't make sense. And what the president is trying to do, holding us hostage to this crazy wall idea that won't work, that is a terrible waste of money, and that he had promised Mexico would pay for. And yet now he wants to shut down our government because obviously Mexico isn't paying for this. We're going to have to pay for it. It's an abomination, and it shouldn't happen. But nonetheless, it looks like that's where he's headed.
Would you favor what has been at least mentioned in news articles about this, that there may be some sort of a potential compromise with $1.6 billion for fencing upgrades or something along those lines? I mean, what would be something that might be more reasonable in your opinion?
I'm all for border security, but I don't like physical walls and fences. Just it's not going to fix this problem. You know, you show me a 30-foot wall, I'll show you a 35-foot ladder, okay? The fundamental problem that we have to address is why so many people are trying to come here illegally rather than going through the legal system. We need legal immigration. People on both sides of the aisle understand this. Immigration is it runs through our blood. We're almost all of us come from families of immigrants. I mean, unless you have American Indians, just your 100% heritage, then we're all a nation of immigrants in some part. It's always been a part of what has made America great. It's also essential to just the everyday running of our economy. We saw right in coastal Massachusetts, especially down in the Cape, how so many small businesses were struggling this summer because they couldn't find enough labor because they're used to getting immigrant labor and many immigrants were just afraid to come. So the bottom line is that we need to address this problem, this challenge, which admittedly is a challenge, by fundamentally fixing the system, not by pretending that it's going to go away if we just build a little bit higher wall or a little bit longer fence.
And would fix the system mean fix the process, pretty
The
much?
Process has to be fixed, absolutely. We need to need to make sure that people are encouraged to come here legally, so we're honest about the folks that we actually need to come here. There are a lot of businesses that knowingly employ undocumented workers because they're just trying to get around the system to stay in business. That's wrong. I mean, I don't think that anybody should be breaking the laws, but the laws should be reasonable to accept the fact that our nation thrives on immigrant labor. Mm. So why have a system where, you know, well-meaning farmers, you know, have to get people to come here illegally just to get their crops harvested?
So when it comes to this immediate fight on a potential government shutdown as of Friday, and whether there's a compromise there or what, I mean, what do you think might be happening there? Will we hear about a compromise, or do you think we're going to have a government shutdown?
You know, what I hear on the street is that we're probably going to have a government shutdown. Mm-hmm. But let's not forget, Democrats won back the House, but the new Congress hasn't started yet. So as of today and as of Friday, the Republicans control the Senate, the House, and the White House. So they're responsible for this 100%. You know, if they can't come up with the votes to prevent a government shutdown, then it's on Trump and the Republicans because they have a majority in both houses of Congress. They should be able to pass this. It's really telling that Trump has been talking about this for 2 years, that Republicans have controlled all of Congress for 2 years, and he still can't get the votes to fund this silly wall.
There's a caller who wants to weigh in on this issue. Vic is calling from Chelmsford. Vic, you're on the air.
Hi, Vic.
Thank you for taking my call. Congressman, I just want to say that we do have a lot of conversations about illegal immigrants, but I just want to ask about legal immigrants like me who are in this country for more than a decade. We have been paying taxes for more than 10 years, social security taxes, everything, and without the guarantee that we will be legal residents ever. I just want to know, what are you going to do in Washington for people like us who have been here for a long, long time without any surety about the social security benefits, if that the benefits that we have been paying without ever knowing that we'll be able to take advantage of these monies that we have paid.
Vic, first of all, just as a member of Congress, I've only been there for a few years, but I want to apologize that you don't feel more welcomed in this country and that you don't have a pathway to citizenship, that you're obviously a very active participant in our economy and doing great things for America, and yet you live every day not knowing that you will be a citizen. That's fundamentally wrong. What a great example of how broken this system is. We have people, you know, immigrants disproportionately create jobs. They're a huge part of our the growth in our economy. The new businesses, especially many tech businesses, are started by immigrants. We should be embracing people like Vic and showing them a pathway to citizenship and showing them that their contributions to America will be rewarded.
I want to take another call. Joe is calling from Lynn. Joe, you're on the air.
Hi, Joe.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Congressman, all of these issues that you're mentioning are important to me, and I think important to most of the Democrats, people in your party, people who supported you, including me. Why didn't you say any of these specific things before the election? I didn't hear, with the Salem News, Lynn Item, Globe, I didn't hear you mention anything specific except the age of the leadership.
Well, I've been talking about these issues for a long time. In fact, I did a lot of work on the immigration issue when we went down and did this border trip. And whereas most members of Congress went down and did a sort of 5-hour border tour with a press conference, I spent 2 days down there with some of these amazing new leaders that I've been supporting, many of whom won their elections and helped us win back the majority, to really get into this issue, to understand it on the ground. In fact, we took a packet of letters written by school children in Salem that we distributed to some of the refugees who are seeking asylum because they've fled to America, not to take our jobs, but to escape violence because they're afraid of losing their lives. And it was an extraordinary experience handing out these letters from school children up in my district in Salem, Massachusetts, to a bunch of people. So, you know, some of them couldn't fully understand, you know, needed help through the language, although some of them were in Spanish. And they started crying. You know, it just meant so much to them to know that the dream that they've always held of America, that it's a country that reaches out with that torch on top of the Statue of Liberty as a beacon of hope to the rest of the world, was actually living up to that promise in small part through these letters of school children.
I want to take another caller here who's got a bit of a different view. Joseph is calling from Lynn, not as opposed to Joe from Lynn, who we just heard from. This is Joseph from Lynn. Joseph, you're on the air.
Hi, Joseph.
Hi, Deborah. Glad to hear you. Hi, Congressman. Deborah, you have a very pleasant voice. I want to compliment you. Congressman, I am a blind person. I respectfully disagree with you. We need a wall. We need to get rid of these sanctuary cities. We need to start taking care of our own people. I get very little help. I'm blind. These people, I've met some of them. I know there's legal immigration, but they get more help. Even the legals, they get jobs, they get help before we do. And I'm sorry, but I have to disagree with you because crime is outrageous, what's going on in other parts of the countries. Other countries, Israel has a wall, Jerusalem has a wall. We have to do something. Our country is getting overpopulated. Eventually, we'll have to close the boat. I mean, I'm not saying I'm against legal immigration, but there's a point when you have to stop when your house is full. I'm sorry, but I have to disagree with you, and I just wanted to comment. We get very little help as disabled people.
All right. So, Congressman, what do you say to your constituents like Joseph who have a different view about immigration?
Well, first of all, Joseph, I thank you for calling in, and I respect the fact that you want to share a different view, and you've done so respectfully. You know, first of all, it is important that we have border security. I mean, Joseph brings up a good point in the sense that, I mean, a nation needs to be able to secure its borders. So I'm with you on that point, Joseph. But I think that some of the other things you're talking about are just wrong. The reality is that, you know, crime is lower among immigrants. And so it's simply not true that kicking out immigrants will make us safer. In fact, one of the things that I recognized before I spoke out in support of the sanctuary city ordinance in my hometown of Salem is that sanctuary cities are safer than non-sanctuary cities. And why is that? Because all the citizens feel bought into public safety. And they know that if there's a crime going on, they can report it to the police. They can help the police without living in fear of being deported. And that's a simple fact. I mean, you can see the statistics that show it. So Joseph, you're disabled and you deserve support. My office has actually received a couple of awards for the advocacy that we've done on behalf of disabled persons because people like Joseph, frankly, aren't getting the support that they need. So he's right on that point, too. But I think Joseph is wrong to say that by building a wall, it's going to fix his disability payments or it's going to reduce crime because the facts tell a different story.
You know, this is just such a heated, divided time. On a lot of issues. Do you worry about a primary challenge in 2020?
I think everybody's got to worry about a primary challenge this day and age, but I know I'm just going to keep doing the work that I do, that my office has done, to serve the people of our district. And that means always putting people first, putting people before politics, putting the country first, even before our political party. And always being there to listen to people. We received an award for the most transparent office in Congress, House or Senate, last term because we're out there. We explain to people what we're thinking. And I'm not afraid to take a tough political position if I believe it's the right thing for the country or for the district that I represent. We also hold a lot of town halls. And I'm going to keep doing that because if I'm not out there to listen to people's views, whether they're people who agree with me on immigration like Joe from Lynn or people who disagree with me on immigration like Joseph from Lynn, I need to hear their views to be their representative in Congress. And one of the things I tell my team every single year is that we're going to work to earn the votes of everyone we can in the district, and we're going to work to win over those who might disagree with me on certain issues, or not agree with me on all of my positions, or not share my party affiliation. I represent not just Democrats, but Republicans and Independents, and right. and even those who don't turn out to vote.
I want to ask you about health care and make sure that we get this in, because we obviously had the ruling on Friday in Texas from a Texas judge saying that the Affordable Care Act is unconstitutional. The law should be overturned. It's likely to go to the Supreme Court. But, you know, what do you think? What's the way that this is going to be addressed as a country, do you think? And what's Congress going to do?
Well, we need to do something, because what's happened for the last 2 years under Republican leadership in the House is we've just debated over how to take health care away from people. And on repeated, with repeated attempts, that's what the Republican leadership has tried to do, with no replacement, by the way. They've never had a replacement for Obamacare as they try to vote it away. I think you're going to see a different conversation with the Democratic House, where we're going to talk not about taking health care away from people, but how to reduce health care costs across the board. And it'll be a vigorous debate, because there are different perspectives on this. I mean, just like there was this contentious party debate over leadership, with some people on the side of new leadership and some people on the side of the status quo, there's going to be a real good debate about healthcare too, because there are a lot of different views within our own party. But that's what Congress should do. We should be willing to have that democratic debate. We should have it within our party, and we should have it with the Republicans to come up with a solution that will preserve protections for pre-existing conditions, something this lawsuit, this Republican lawsuit, is trying to take away, that will preserve healthcare access for the millions of Americans that stand to lose it under this ruling, and that ultimately will reduce healthcare costs for all Americans.
And finally, we have about a minute left here. I'm going to end on a personal note. You recently became a dad.
I did.
And you showed me a photo of Emmy, who's beautiful, by the way. I just wonder, how's it changed your perspective?
You know, I think it makes you realize how much more is at stake here. I want Emmy to have a voice and a future in whatever she decides to do, maybe in politics. You know, Joe Biden called and said, Seth, you might have just given birth, or your wife just gave birth to a future president of the United States. I hope that she can do that if she wants to do it. I want to make sure that we have a safe and healthy community and planet and country for her to live in. So in some ways, it just sort of raises the stakes, and it makes me fight a little bit harder and stand up a little bit stronger for what I believe, because I'm going to continue fighting for the future, because my daughter is going to live in it.
All right. Well, Congressman Seth Moulton, he represents the 6th Congressional District. That includes Beverly, Lynn, Newburyport. Congressman, thanks so much for coming in and taking our listeners' calls.
Thanks so much for having me back.
That's our show for today. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. Our show is produced by Jamie Bologna, Chris Siderek, Paris Alston, Zoe Mitchell, and Eve Zukoff. Tim Skog is our technical director. Our executive producer is Hitesh Hathi. I'm Deborah Becker. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.